it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Welcome all, because all are welcome to Homegrown, show about local art. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with the one who's so divine and will blow your mind, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Good morning, Clinton. I love it when you rhyme.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. You come up with such inventive ones.
It takes me a long time.
Does it? That's what you spend your Saturday night doing?
Yes, we'll say that.
Okay. All right. Oh, really? We'll say that? Oh, okay. There's a story there.
No, it's just that spending all my night thinking of rhymes sounds much better than spending my Saturday nights losing at video games.
Oh, okay. So not so much of a story. All right.
Not so much. More a footnote.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll go with that. How are you this morning?
I am fine.
Are you? You are fine, honey. Mm-hmm.
For the people who don't know, we are African-American. That might, if you, it, maybe we should have said that at the beginning of this whole thing.
Right, because they can't see us.
That would have cleared many, many things up and answered many questions. But it also could have caused people to call the cops and have them come and beat the crap out of us.
Let's not do that.
Let's not do that.
No, we don't want to do that.
We don't
maybe,
want that.
You know what? And speaking of cops, I think we should do the parental advisory.
Speaking of the parental advisory, we're going to start the show the way we usually start the show, which is with a parental advisory. At some point in our lovely wander through the world of art, we may happen to say the word rector. Rector. So we'll try not to, of course. Oh, my goodness. We will try not to with the utmost of our ability. But if you have young ones, if you have little bits of innocence, if you are concerned about having to bend them over and explain to them what a rector may be. I don't know what the relationship between bending them over and what a rector and the definition of rector, but I'm not here to question your parental choices. I'm just here to give you options. But if you don't want to go there, you might want to send them away and have them win at the video games that I spend my Saturday nights losing. There you go.
You know, I mean, normally you do, you know, adjectives or verbs. Interesting, you chose a noun today.
They're all words. And words are just inherently evil.
They're just dangerous.
Why give them categories? Parts of speech only give them power.
Yes. Much like nature, as we were talking before.
Much
like nature.
I'm just going to go with that. I don't really see that connection, but I'm just going to let that go.
Well, you were saying it was dangerous, you know.
And nature is dangerous.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Anyway.
I'm there. I'm on the same page.
I think we should move to our first guest this morning, Clinton.
Our first guest is a curator who is coming to us to talk about an exhibit with the New City Arts Initiative. We'd like to welcome to our show for the first time, Leslie Ava Shaw. How are you, Leslie?
Very well, thank you.
Oh my gosh, I've got two Leslies here. I'm going to be...
Yeah, right.
And she spells it correctly, just like me. Those EY people just make you crazy, don't they?
Really?
Yeah.
So, you have curated a show for the New City Arts Initiative. Would you like to tell us about it? It's currently up.
Well, it is a show that was actually, the proposal for the show was accepted by New City Arts Initiative. Every year they put out a call to artists generally, not even curators necessarily, but artists, to submit proposals for exhibitions, and I submitted mine. I asked them first if they would accept a curator's proposal. They said absolutely. So I submitted that about a year ago, and they accepted it. I created the theme in advance after finding two artists, because they said they would prefer local artists that were open to non-locals. So this time I selected local artists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so how did you come to... So how did you come to this project? Did you know that you wanted to curate a show? That's what you wanted. That's what you started with. And then you went from there. Or did you run into these two artists and said, oh, I really need to do something with these guys, and then go from there? What was the genesis?
Actually, I wanted to curate a show, and I didn't know. I knew a few artists at the McGuffey, for example, who I had met, but I didn't know anyone else. So I started doing some surfing, internet surfing, and found Piedmont Council for the Arts.
Yes, indeed.
And those artists who had websites, I viewed their work and found these two interesting artists, one a painter and one a photographer, and I thought their work had something in common. So before, I think this is actually before I submitted the proposal with the theme and the artists, I visited their studio. Well, one artist studio, and the other, she came to my place with her works, and we looked at them together. Because it's one thing to see work, you know, on a flat screen, but I wanted to see them in person. And we had a really great studio visits, and I went from there. I just thought of this theme and thought about. I like the idea of also presenting different types of art, different media together. Right? I mean, why not? So just the idea of a photographer and a painter and what they might have in common, how they could dialogue with each other.
That, can I say that that was very interesting for me, having the mix of media there, especially the way it's hung and going back and forth between the two. What is it that's interesting about that? I mean, part of it was engaging because it was nice to have the difference, but part of it was also kind of jarring because I guess my lack of experience in terms of visual art had prepared me only. And maybe it's just, you know what it is? It's museum culture. That's exactly what it is. It's all the time I've spent walking through art museums where you just see painting after painting after painting after painting after painting, or sculpture after sculpture after sculpture after sculpture, or photograph after photograph after photograph, and not mixing them. What is it that's interesting about mixing them?
Well, I was a docent at the Whitney Museum of American Art for 23 years, and they do a biennial every 2 years. There's often a mix. They don't necessarily say, okay, here's our photography gallery, here's our painting gallery, here's our sculpture gallery. It's all placed in there together, based on sometimes a theme, sometimes depending on the curator. Also, the Brooklyn Museum recently reinstalled their examples from their permanent collection with a great mix of not only painting next to photography and sculpture, but African art, contemporary art, American classical art, that kind of thing. So, but why not? I mean, it's true, though. It's the convention continues where we have the photography gallery, the painting gallery, and so on. But I think, listen, think about how you place your art in your home. If you're fortunate enough, and I think everybody can own art, you have your paintings, you have photography, you have prints, drawings, posters, etc. Are you going to say, okay, here's my painting section, here's my photography? Not at all. So like the idea of creating a space where works do relate to each other, maybe in jarring ways, so what? That's okay. Or maybe thematically, or maybe in terms of the works of art's palette and things like that.
All right, yeah, I dig that. So the name of the show is Yearnings. The two artists, Jeanette Cohen and Stacey Evans, local artists, because I don't want to embarrass myself, which one's the painter, which one's the photographer?
Stacey Evans photographs.
Stacey photographs, and Jeanette Cohen does the paintings.
Yes.
So what was it about the works of these two artists that spoke to you?
The painter, Jeanette, she's a kind of expressionist. I love the way she handles paint. It's very painterly and brushy and creamy. And I love the sky, and much of her painting is filled with sky. It's a low horizon. Just very lovely, pleasant paintings. I could live with those very easily. And there's something about them. I think they're very nostalgic. You know, they're kind of it's like this kind of desire for the perfect place. And I think we have that here in Central Virginia. That's so beautiful here. You just drive a few miles and you're in a kind of paradise of mountains and sky and trees and just beautiful nature here. And then, Stacy, actually, this is a new body of work, which I hadn't seen until like a month before the show opened. She said, okay, this is what I'd like to show. I saw her series where she photographs from trains through the window, similar, it's through the window. But her work, is a lot of some of what I saw, it has a kind of edge, kind of grit or edge to it. Some of the images are very pleasant, but others are a little bit disturbing, but not like hit you over the head. You're not quite sure, but there's something, you know, kind of maybe troubling going on. And I see that. I saw that in some of the newer works that she did. And so, yeah.
So Clinton and I went to see the exhibit. And one of the things that struck me was that all of the windows that she was photographing out of were, they all had a certain texture to them. They all had a certain kind of old time country feel to them. And then when I looked at the titles, like one was taken in Norway, one was taken in like Miami outside of, inside of Sheraton, you know? But they all had a very, not of this century kind of feel to them. Is that what all of her work looks like, or is that specific to the things she chose for this show?
Yeah, I think with her work, it's often about nostalgia, too. That kind of looking to the past or holding on to the past. And I saw that in the works that I had originally seen. She's photographing old buildings, but say, or a lone building where the remainder of the city is sort of maybe has been bulldozed or knocked down.
Yeah.
So there's this desire to sort of hold on. And I also like the kind of kitsch of some of those, like the tropical scenes,
yes,
the one through the window, and those glass blinds. Those are...
My favorite was the window, and it looked like it was a very old house, but on the window was a sticker of a unicorn inside a rainbow. And I'm like... Oh, okay. This is like a little child, you know, and I've seen that in like my family's houses where, you know, someone's moved in with their grandmother, with their child, and the child has decorated the window with stuff that's theirs, but the window still looks very old, and what they're looking out onto is another old house. And it's just kind of, and for a minute I was like, okay, is that stuck on the window inside the photograph, or was that, did they paste it? Like, how is that sitting there? It took me a while to figure out what was actually going on, which was really interesting to me because it didn't seem to fit, and that's what drew me into it.
Actually, it's a piece of stained glass, but the type that you could get, you know, a hanging piece you could put in the window. That's what it is. Also, it's actually a snow scene. It's all snow.
It's all snow?
Ooh,
okay.
There are branches through the window, and it's a really kind of close-up view of outside. You can't really see any other tree, smaller trees or homes. You actually see the snow, the branches, and it's that, the thing is, it's so white, and then you have that high-key colored little unicorn.
Yeah.
It's sort of kind of dreamy. I don't know. There's something about it that... otherworldly. I don't know.
Yeah, it literally made me think, because when I was like 5 or 6, my mother decided to get me a record player, and she got me these Disney albums, and I remember very clearly putting things in my window, like Disney stickers and stuff, while I sat there and listened to to Disney albums. So it immediately brought back my childhood. And that's really great when a photograph can do that and bring something like that back to you.
Well, I think that's the point of art, that it just, it speaks to the viewer in varying ways. You know, for you, it was something very personal. And it's interesting that you remembered it a little differently than actually it is. But because perhaps it was your own memory, thinking about the window and the houses beyond.
This is really interesting because for a number of times in this conversation, I've been drawing parallels to music. When you were talking about arranging different forms of media, I went back to a conversation that we've had with musicians before about how the iPod Shuffle has changed the way we present music, changed the way we consume music, how so much of it is now outside of context, and you'll have one song from this genre and one song from this style and one song from this age all mixed together. And right now, just as you were talking as well, I was thinking of an analog with music. Anyway, we should do a drop. We're going to take a moment for...
Hi, this is Charlie Pasterfield.
Susan Munson.
And Stuart Holm.
From Mama Tried.
And you're listening to...
Homegrown Radio on 94.7.
60 minutes after the hour. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're here with Leslie Ava Shaw, who's curated the show Yearnings from the New City Arts Initiative. And we're talking about the show. Stay tuned, of course, after the show for your crazy guys, Rick Moore and the Sunday morning wake-up. Why are you laughing?
Why are you calling him crazy guys? What is that?
Because he's wild and... You don't find Rick wild and wacky? The Sunday morning wake-up call? It's like a morning like fun show to me.
No, I'm not saying he's not fun. I just would never have described him as wacky.
Wacky?
He's like a... You know what?
Slapstick?
No, he's like a grandpa. He is. He's like a big grandpa teddy bear. Perspective is everything, ladies and gentlemen.
Rick, I so hope you're listening right now. So the show's called Yearnings. Can you talk about that title? Why Yearnings? Does it speak to I'm going to do interviewer. What you shouldn't do as an interviewer, number one, which is answer your own question. Does it speak to what you're talking about in terms of the sense of melancholy, the sense of nostalgia?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But I also think because the home is present, I mean, in very different ways. In Jeanette's work, there's a structure on the landscape. In Stacy's work, usually it's an interior space, and it could be a hotel room, but you get a sense that it's a place where you live, where you place your head at night and have your meals, albeit sometimes the space is, you know, not an ideal space. Nonetheless, it's a space that protects you and, you know, provides you with shelter in that regard. But so Yearnings, I think, with Jeanette's work as well, you know, again, as I said earlier, with that landscape that is so beautiful, I think that often when we're there, it just gives us this fulfillment. You know, it feels good. It's a place to be. It's a respite, and there's that. And with Stacy's work, it's kind of, when she's the fact that it's the inside and then the outside, and you're looking out the window, through the window. Is there something out there that you desire, you need, you want? So I think that's what that's about.
Yeah, that's what when we were at the exhibit, that's something that Clinton and I talked about. It's like, he's like, well, I don't get it. It's called Yearnings, but these are all, you know, interiors looking out instead of, you know, looking in. And I said, well, but you know,
that isn't what I said. What I said was, what I talked about was that Ava in her notes talked about a sense of home and a representation of home. When the perspective, which I found interesting, because the perspective was looking out away from your home.
And what I said to him was, well, everybody longs to move away from home. You know, when you're growing up, the home is the last place you want to spend your days. But after you've moved away, all of a sudden it becomes, that place becomes beautiful to you. So the looking out can work in both perspectives. And I love that she chose different places, not just different places, like in Virginia, but she went to New York. Like one of them is in Manhattan. I love that she chose different places, but they all had the same kind of feel to them. And actually my favorite painting is, one of the last ones that was hung, The Storm. That one is so gorgeous because the sky in it is, it really looks like a huge thunderstorm is about to hit you, and it's gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous. I love the colors in it. And so how did you decide the order of them? Because I definitely noticed I was taken on a journey. So I was wondering if there was a specific journey that you had in mind when you placed them.
Well, I knew which works would be in the show in advance because we had a studio visit again prior to the show. And I selected some works of Stacy's, and then Jeanette actually had quite a few pieces, and I said, I like everything, you know, bring everything. And then what we put on the postcard was actually, it's in the show, but we decided to pair to that work, the tropical photograph with Through the Glass Blinds, with a different one because it was just... serendipitous that many of the Jeanette's paintings, the palette really dialogued or was so similar color-wise.
Yeah.
That was an accident because we did not even see that in the studio. It was not aware because Stacy's work was a smaller scale at that point, and just not really thinking about that so much. It's more maybe subject matter, I suppose. But so then we were there. Of course, listen, this is what a curator does. Mm-hmm. You take the work, you put one next to the other, and move things around. Okay, move it here, move there. And, you know, same thing with, you know, thinking about that back wall, you know, because, and what do we want people to see through the window, and how do these? But actually, the one thing I did decide in advance was that on that large wall to the left, that we would have a large work by Stacy and a large work by Jeanette. And then on the right wall, it would be a dialogue of, say, we have a couple of works of Stacy's, a couple of Jeanette's, and then the back two walls. One wall would be all Stacy's work, and one wall would be all Jeanette's work. And, you know, I, of course, I worked with the artist, too. You know,
right.
I said, oh, you do like that. You know, I wanted them to be happy as well.
Yeah, and because it's not a museum space or a regular space where people are used to seeing art, I imagine that created its own challenge because then you're in a hallway and you're only lighted by fluorescent lights above and maybe some daylight through, you know, doors or windows. And did that figure into how you placed things?
Well, absolutely, even in advance, because when I knew that the exhibition would be in this space of the, you know, NPR studios, I knew the space. I'd been to many shows there. Of course, I had to take that into consideration as far as what would be selected.
Right.
And then knowing in advance, I did go to a number of First Friday exhibitions, and I thought about things in advance. You know,
yeah.
I thought about those hallways. I didn't really want to put anything through there, but have most of the works in the front, and then those back two walls, which has natural light coming in too, which
yes.
really helped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting kind of because you come in and you see the first few works, and you're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Okay, I like that. And then you kind of have to wind your way through the building to get to the back of it. And I like that you chose to do all of one artist on one wall and all of one artist on the other, because the mixture up front and then the separation in the back really made it jarred me a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, but this is all paintings, all right. And I had to kind of change my perspective to look at it a little bit, which was nice though. It was really neat.
Thank you.
So you're from Manhattan.
Right. Born in the Bronx. But I lived in Manhattan most of my life.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So what was it like? What's the difference? What's the biggest difference that you notice between art and the arts community in New York and art and the arts community in Charlottesville?
That's like apples and oranges. That's very, very hard. We're in a really small city, and New York is the center of the universe.
Yes.
Art people come from all over the world to live there and make art there and have a successful career there.
Right.
Studio space is much, much more expensive there, even though it's getting more expensive here, too. But mm-hmm. still, so that's a consideration. There's a much, much more diversity as far as who's making the art, what kind of art is being made. You have numerous museums.
Yeah.
But it's also very, very challenging for an artist to live in New York, you know,
yeah.
because of all those variables. And even to get a show here, I think there actually could be, there are more opportunities.
Right.
For artists. I mean, not tremendous opportunities because there are a lot of spaces, a lot of venues. We need really more.
Yes.
We definitely need more venues and more opportunities for visual artists to express themselves and have the opportunity to share their work with the world.
Yeah. So knowing the kind of spaces that are here in Charlottesville now, would you advocate placing art in, and since we're probably not going to have like a huge boom of museums being built, because that's just not the way it's not the way the city plan is going. So would you advocate businesses and different shops featuring art as a way, as a better way for artists in this area to get their stuff out there?
I think it would be great if we could have more commercial spaces. I mean, more galleries. It's a tough business.
Yeah.
And you have your overhead.
Yeah.
What we need is the support from the people who live here and the surrounding area, and they should be buying more art. It's not really that expensive here at all. It's very reasonable, in fact.
Yeah.
So I think we need that. And there are some vacant spots on the downtown mall and other places around the city. So come on, people. Open a gallery. It's time to open up a gallery. And, you know, but it's a tremendous commitment. And I know there are a few people who, of course, have businesses, and they do. But, yeah, I mean, you have to, I guess, be inventive, come up with ideas to say, okay, here's this vacant space. Maybe we can rent it for a month and have an exhibition.
Well, and I know that, you know, Blue Moon Diner has done shows of art in their diner, you know, and said, oh, this month we're showing art from these three artists. But I think the other problem that Charlottesville has is getting the word out that that's what's going on. And I know, you know, nobody has a problem doing that in New York. I mean, it may cost some money, but that seems to be the biggest struggle. I mean, being an artist in this town myself, I know that that's the biggest thing, is letting people know where it is, what's going on, and whose work we're going to see. Do you have any ideas about how we as the artists can be better at promoting ourselves and our work in this little?
Well, one thing I did, I mean, I said we need a postcard. This was separate from New City Arts. I and the artists, we paid for the printing of the postcard.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them around town in various different retail establishments and wherever there was a bulletin board. And I took some over to the visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the thing is, the NPR studios, it's once after First Friday, you can only see the art if you make an appointment to see it.
Right.
But we worked it out so that on Saturday, June 18th, the space will be open from 10:30 to 4 during the Look 3 Photography Festival.
Oh, that's great.
So walk-ins are welcome on June 18th, 10:30 to 4. And that's another thing. You know, if people aren't walking around, and I mean, we've got this little 8-block downtown mall.
Right.
Walk on a side street, walk on Water Street, and go a little further and see what's happening.
Yeah.
Because I think that's also part of it.
Mm.
People might just be going to those places that they know.
Yes.
But the other challenge of, you know, if you have a show in the blue diner, or if say in Mudhouse,
Blue Moon Mudhouse.
Yeah, Blue Moon. You have to be in there dining. You've got to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So in order to even see, but you know, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I was actually, because, you know, a while ago we interviewed Russell Richards, and, you know, Clinton has known him for years, but I was new to his art, and I'm sitting in rapture having lunch one day, and I look up, and I'm like, oh, that's Russell's painting. Look at that. You know, so I think if we could have more of that, if more businesses and places in the city could be, I don't know, what's the correct term? Arm twisted? Forced?
Inspired.
There you go.
Encouraged.
Inspired. That's much nicer.
Inspired and encouraged.
To support the artists of this town by, you know, showing off what we do. I think that would go a long way. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us. You were just a gem.
Thank you. I loved it. Thank you for having me, and great meeting you, and see you next time.
Yes, ma'am.
Indeed. Make sure you check out Yearnings at the New City Arts Initiative Gallery at WVTF and Radio IQ. You have to contact New City Arts Initiative to set up. Yes.
No, I also mentioned June 18th. Yeah. Don't forget June 18th. Walk-ins welcome, 10:30 to 4.
You have to set up an appointment, but don't forget June 18th. Walk-ins welcome.
216 West Water Street.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Thank you.
All right. Time to talk about some of the artistic things that you can do in our wonderful artistic town. Currently running from June, run now to June 12th. Currently running now from June 12th, American Shakespeare Center's spring season. You've just got until today to get the last bit of it, so check that out. And Stanton, also currently running from now until the 18th, The Maids by Offstage Theater at McShane House at 209 Maury Avenue. June 13th to 19th, of course, it's the Look 3 Festival. Photos, and more photos galore. Go online and look up Look 3 Festival to get the collection of their events. June 14th, August 28th, American Shakespeare Center summer season starts. It's Twelfth Night and King Lear by the Bard, and then the modern musical Bloody Andrew Jackson. Because, of course, that's modern. That's early modern work, right? No, who knows? Who knows? Go see it. June 16th to June 22nd, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike at Oak Grove Theater in Verona, Virginia, making its rounds through the regional theater scene. June 16th, it's the Big Blue Door Improv at Seville Coffee at 7 p.m. The Bloomsday Celebration at Tin Whistle Irish Pub at 4 p.m. Readings from the master's works. Readings from Ulysses. Readings from Letters. Stately Plump. Buck Mulligan. Washed himself. Ah, oh, so great. Go check that out. June 17th to 27th, the Guerrilla Theater's Summer Shorts. And June 18th, an open mic night comedy at Fellini's. And speaking of Junes and Teenths, do not miss the Juneteenth Freedom Celebration at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. It's going to be a blast, going from 11 to 5 p.m. We're talking bands like Mighty Joshua, Big Lean, Legacy of Wayanoke, Pete Carey, Horace Scruggs, Chiamba Jr. dancing. Indeed, Martha Peterson. Also, they're going to have food, craft vendors, exhibits, and more. Check it out. The Juneteenth Freedom Celebration at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. If you don't know what Juneteenth is, ask Leslie. She will be more than pleased to tell you at length, ad nauseum, what Juneteenth celebration is.
Yes, I will.
Again and again and again.
He's heard it before.
Again and again and again. Today, at Pro Renata Farm Brewery, High School Songwriter Series. How interesting, the High School Songwriter Series. Who knew? What a town we have. Today, it's Isabella Bailey and Anna Jo Johnson, two 16-year-old high school songwriters, performing their work at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Who knows? Maybe they're the next big thing. Maybe they're the next small thing. But right now, they are the thing at Pro Renata. Also today, Veronica Swift at the Carrington Place Community Hall just off Royal Road. Jazz Orgasmon. All right. today, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Also, June 15th, Aaron Lunsford and Charles Owen at the Bebedero. Phil West at Dr. Ho's Humble Pie. And June 16th, the UVA a cappella group, The First Harmonics, will be at the Jefferson Theater with special guest Wendy Repass. June 17th, Susie and the Pistols at Glasshouse Winery. Also, DJ Tulo at Tavern on the James and DJ Frank Rivera at Rapture. Chickenhead Blues Band at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And my boys, the Robert Jospe Trio at the Bebedero. June 18th, Devin Sprawl and Sue Selzak at the Southern Cafe Music Hall.
I love Devin! She's so awesome. Go see it.
You don't want to miss that. You don't. June 18th also, unless you're going to go see Mr. Baby, Bateau Rouge, and Leland Sundries at the Anteroom. What?
I think you said that wrong.
What?
Bateau. There you go.
Bateau. Get your bateau on. Also June 18th, Illusionistics at Heritage on the Main, LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar, DJ Groovematic. Did I say Groovematic correctly?
We'll talk about that later. There's going to be a lot more work to get that one right.
Why can't I get a show right for once? Just for once. God. Every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, Traditional Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, an open mic night at Pro Ray Natta Farm Brewery and Bob Bonetta at Cafe Katura. And of course, Wednesdays means the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's and Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday is the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And if that can't rule ya, time to school ya. It's the John Dirth Quintet down at Miller's, because every once in a while, when you need a smile, when the blues are coming on you like a pylon, you just got to come down to Dirth. And that is just some of the wonderful artistic events in our wonderful artistic town. If you're an artist and have an event, please contact us. You can email us at our handy-dandy email address, homegrown947@gmail.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/homegrownwpvc. If you've been to any of these events and want to talk about them, go to our Facebook page and talk about them there, because we don't, here at Homegrown, we don't believe in critics, but we do believe in audience.
That's right. And if you would like, let us know. We'll even read your comments on the air. That's right, because we are all about you. All right? That's how it works. Homegrown, now you know.
Ba-bum. 37 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The only voice on Charlottesville that thought it was important to put your show about your local art on the air. What up, WPVC? Stay tuned after this for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Your host today is going to be Sean McCord talking to Paul Friedman from the UVA Politics Department about this crazy election. Crazy? I don't consider this election to be all that. It seems pretty normal, don't you think? I don't see anything out of the ordinary. Okay, I'm not even going to continue with that.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
You know what I am going to continue with? Our next guest, who is here joining us to talk about wonderful things in the theater world. Oh my gosh, have we hit Charlottesville arts royalty. It's Julie Hamburg, Artistic Director of Live Arts Theater.
Good morning.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's a gorgeous day, and I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
I am happy to have you here, especially in that wonderful flowing frock of yours.
Thank you.
You are frocktastic.
Thank you.
It's too bad the radio audience can't see. See, this is why it's good to be here. Not that you should be here, because I am not frocktastic. I'll tell you this right now. Anyway, I hear that Live Arts has another season coming up.
We do. A fabulous, bold, wonderful season for 2016-2017.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you want to hear about it?
I would love to hear about it.
I would love to talk about it.
So first, a little setup. Yeah. I have to ask. How hard was it to choose the season this year? What were you juggling?
It's always crazy time and a complete pleasure. We had, let's see, what we do at Live Arts is we have artists and company members come together every year as a group of readers, and we look through, I don't know how many scripts, let us guess, 100 scripts. So we have submissions from the community. We have the things people want to do and just suggest that we look at scripts. And then we had 29 people be on this committee who created a short list for us. Mm-hmm. And then we go through and choose what we think that would start conversations in the community, that we think that the community needs to see, experience, I guess, get the biggest bang for our buck. We want it to be bold. We want it to speak to the entire community, I guess, and that there'd be something for everyone, that there'd be a comedy, that there'd be a drama, that, you know, something, mm-hmm. a nice diversity of programming. So, and I guess that you won't be able to see anywhere else. In quite this way, I guess we'll put it that way, with the whole Live Arts stamp.
So choosing shows that'll give you the best bang for the buck, that make economic sense, that provide a stylistic variety, and also have a unique stamp that says something about the organization, that doesn't seem like too hard a thing to do.
And the other thing is, we always need to make sure that they're... is something for the artistic community. So our mission is forging theater and community, right? So we have more than just the community, meaning our audience. We have the community of artists that we also want to make sure. Do we have the director for it? Do we have the actors for it, right? And so that's always a big consideration as well. So that adds to the mix, and it's really, really important.
Really, is that why my suggested play, 16 Boys Named Mustafa, didn't even make the short list?
Did not make
16 16-year-old boys named Mustafa didn't even make the short list.
I'm sorry to say. Actually.
Okay, yeah. I'll try. See, now that I've got the explanation, I'll try not to take that personally.
Yeah.
Then,
yeah.
All right. Cool. So, why don't you tell us what did make the final?
Okay,
list?
I shall. Okay, we'll break this up a little bit so we don't have to go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay, good. So the first one in the fall is Electric Baby. And this is up in the Founders. We have two theaters. The Founders is the small little jewel of a black box, which has about 70 seats.
Love the black box.
It's so wonderful to work in. And so you get up close, completely up close.
Oh yes.
When you're in a Founders show.
Oh, yes.
Right? Yes. You know this. Leslie knows this.
Yeah, it's great because the audience is like, it's so close, it's so great. And anybody who works there is like, is there any way we can get more stage space?
Exactly.
Can we just hang the chairs on the walls, maybe? Can we do that?
Okay, so we're in the Founders first, and this is a regional premiere, and it's written It's written by Stephanie Zadravac, and it starts out with a Romanian woman, and she is sitting by a bassinet, and there are all these crazy wires coming out of this bassinet, and she's speaking, cooing to you, but also to, the baby, mm-hmm. and then she starts talking to the audience,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and what you see is this amazing glow coming out of the bassinet, and you discover that the baby glows. It's a wonderful play, utilizing sort of magic realism, and all of the lives of six strangers intersect and all are drawn to this beautiful glowing baby. I'm pretty psyched about it.
Excellent.
Right? Yes. Okay. Next is our, holiday musical.
Uh-huh.
And it is the classic Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls?
Guys and Dolls!
Holy, like the Guys and Dolls?
The Guys and Dolls.
Like the guys, hey, it's a guys and there's a doll and I'm a guy. Like that thing, the Guys and Dolls?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, okay. It's a classic, beautiful
you basically know every single song. Do you, Clinton, know every single song in the show?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Exactly.
Know every single song in this show.
Who directed this before, Clinton? I think it was you.
Yes.
Yes. At another theater.
Does anything matter at any other theaters?
I heard that was an excellent production, I have to say.
It was amazing.
Thank you, Leslie. She just said it was amazing.
A lot of my production budget goes to me paying people afterwards to say nice things about the stuff that I've done.
This is untrue. He's an excellent director. Come now. All right. So Guys and Dolls straddles December and January. So it's our big holiday show. And I truly, well, all of the shows really, really want to emphasize everybody should come out to audition.
There you go.
All right. There we go. Thank you. And next.
So you're saying that just because there are no rules written in Guys and Dolls for tremendously overweight black men, I should still come out
you
to audition
still,
for
still, because we hope, that's right, and we hope that this, well, all of our shows, that this will be a ethnically rich production.
What if I can get 16-year-old boys named Mustafa?
Well, I don't think
they could be the chorus.
That's
don't
right.
Like
I don't
that,
know if there will be 16 South Asian men in Guys and Dolls, but we would want all of them to audition.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
Yes, baby, we want them. We want them in a live art show.
Excellent.
excuse me. All right, and then we are back up in the Founders, and it's in February, and we're doing a play called Well, which is was on Broadway, but it was a really unusual play, so I'm not sure a lot of people knew about it.
Does anybody know about anything on Broadway that doesn't have Disney in the title?
There we go. There we are. So, Well is written by Lisa Cron, who currently has a Broadway crazy time, wonderful play called Fun Home. And if anybody gets a chance to see it, please do. It is a musical. Clinton, do you know about this?
I do not know about this.
You do not know about Fun Home? Oh, my God. You need to know. Okay. Anybody? Google Fun Home. You will be astonished. And please, please go to see Fun Home in New York. But hopefully Live Arts will do it in the future.
Uh-huh.
So wonderful. Okay. So it's by Lisa Cron. And it is the playwright talks about it as a one-person show with people in it. yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And it is about, as she says, wellness. It starts out with her trying to talk about why one person would get sick and another person would be well. Mm-hmm. And then her mom happens to be in a big comfy chair on stage. And her mom's like, wait a minute. Are you saying that, are you going to talk about me and my being sick? And so mom is there and is having running commentary the entire time. And then she brings on other actors who help her act out the whole.
Nice.
Michigoths.
Yeah.
But she also talks about, and they play out, how her mom decided she wanted an integrated neighborhood. And so she integrated her neighborhood.
Oh my.
Yeah. So, and so we're saying kind of hilarious at the same time as passionate, at the same time as, I guess, a crazy transformative time. Basically, everybody was shocked. It was like, it's on Broadway. Why? And then they said, oh, my God, we've never seen something like this.
Wow.
So it's time to do it here.
Cool. What's next?
So next is Peter and the Starcatcher, which is basically the backstory to how Peter Pan became Peter Pan. And there are pirates. And
who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
There would be pirates.
There would be pirates.
In the backstory of Peter Pan.
Yeah. And Captain Hook, his name is Blackstache. Oh, my God. So incredibly fun, not only for the actors who will be playing it, but for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one where that is in the Gibson. Next one we're going to see Realistic Joneses.
The Realistic Joneses.
Realistic Joneses. Oh my God, I'm in love with this play. It's by Will Eno, who is has been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize for another piece that we did back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it is he's known for basically being able to get inside America's head and give you a little slice of that in a very strange and wonderful way. We'll put it that way. All right.
Interesting. All right. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Next.
And the next is A Woman of No Importance.
Is that the A Woman of No Importance?
It is indeed, by Oscar Wilde.
That wild man.
That wild man who is known for
the importance of being earnest.
There we go.
Which, if you missed it, the American Shakespeare Center in this current season, don't blame me, because I came here every week and told you about
it. It was awesome. Yes, yes. Okay, so we haven't done Wilde in a long time. But
a while.
It's time.
It's been a wild while.
I love this. And our little write-up, it says, think Downton Abbey with the knives out. Which is how we're describing Woman of No Importance. Actually, there's a lot of meat, but there's also a lot of wit and a great time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the season.
Wow. Excellent.
But there's a lot of other things that go on at Live Arts, including a lot of stuff in the Foundry, where we do our more, not, I wouldn't say more, our, I guess, experimental work.
Right.
Put it that way. New plays.
Stuff that's being built.
That's right. As we go along.
Stuff that still has some pieces to go into it.
That's right. So join us there, too.
There you go. And so, but, you know, it's like you're building the house and then giving somebody else the keys. Because it just so happens that a couple of days ago, the board sent out an email to the people on the email list. And I had to do many threats, many beggings, and many well-placed gift certificates to Panera to get on the email list, to sneak on the email list. So I was there announcing yours and your resignation.
That's right.
What is up
what
with
is
that?
Okay, so this has this information has gone to, yes, our email list and not to the general press yet. But I can absolutely talk about it. So,
oh, it has gone to the press because Seville's got it on their website.
Oh, there you go. Well, because they're on our mailing list. So
they didn't wait for the press release.
Of course not.
I just want to tell you that.
That's cool.
They
That's
broke
cool.
that news.
So Matt Jocelyn, who is the executive director, and myself, who's artistic director, we have put in our resignation at the same time.
Like two spent swimmers who do choke themselves with their art.
Well, we decided we wanted to do it at the same time because, first, just got to say truthfully, we loved working together, have a wonderful working relationship, and really decided that it would be best for the organization if we did it at the same time. Are leaving Live Arts in the best shape that we think it's ever been in. We're in a beautiful situation and don't feel like we could leave at a better time. We have an incredibly great board and are in fiscally the best shape. We're in a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
So for me...
But is there a guard at the helm? Is there a rector who's taking care of it?
Yes, but I can't talk about that yet.
All right.
Because that
All
will
right.
be that will be announced the next day or so.
I see. But for you, you're going to say, but for you...
But for me, I've been at Live Arts for 5 years.
Which, 5 wonderful years?
5 wonderful years. And I have to say, truly, this is the best job in the world. But for me, I just have to say that my body is basically saying, hey, you work a heck of a lot of hours and it's time to be a little calmer. So that's it. I'm going to probably remain in the community, at least for the time being. I love Live Arts. I love Charlottesville. It's a beautiful and great, as you say, arts rich place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is time to do something that is where I can pull back just a little bit more. So Live Arts is a beautiful but demanding place, and as it should be, right? So
I think that's probably the most concise and accurate definition of Live Arts
there we go.
That I've ever heard.
Yeah, so it gives me joy to be able to hand over this this torch to whoever will come next.
Well, Julie, you stepped in to a very difficult position in very difficult times and went with it. Thank you for 5 years of keeping our favorite theater up and afloat.
It I can't tell you what a great pleasure it has been. It has been a joy. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. Next season of Live Arts is coming up. But you know what's coming up right now? Do we have time for it? Are we going to do it? Oh, yo, she's like, we're going to do it. It's Leslie's Weekly Rant.
All right. Well, I was going to talk about Muhammad Ali today, and then Clinton, the wonderful prophet that he is, posted Billy Crystal's eulogy, and it is absolute gold, and I couldn't do any better. So I thought I would just play you guys a little excerpt of it, a little tribute to the greatest.
After he was stripped of the title and the right to fight anywhere in the world, he gave speeches at colleges and on television that totally reached me. He seemed as comfortable talking to kings and queens as the lost and unrequited. He never lost his sense of humor, even as he lost everything else. He was always himself, willing to give up everything for what he believed in. And his passionate rhetoric about the life and plight of black people in our country resonated strongly in my house. I grew up in a house that was dedicated to civil rights. My father was a producer of jazz concerts in New York City and was one of the first to integrate bands in the 40s and 50s. Jazz musicians referred to my dad as the Branch Rickey of jazz. Yeah, yeah. My uncle and my family, Jewish people, produced Strange Fruit, Billie Holiday's classic song describing the lynching of African Americans in this country. And so I felt him. And now there he was, just a few feet from me. I couldn't stop looking at him. And he seemed to, like, glow. And he was, like, in slow motion, his amazing face, smiling and laughing. I was seated a few seats from him on the dais. And in the room were all of these athletes in their individual sports, great ones. Gino Marchetti of the Baltimore Colts, Franco Harris of the Steelers, Archie Griffin, who had won the Heisman from Ohio State, literary legends, Neil Simon, George Plimpton, all on the dais, fawning over Ali, who then looked at me with an expression that seemed to say, "What is Joel Gray doing here?" Mr. Schaap introduced me as one of Ali's closest and dearest friends. Two people clapped. My wife and the agent. I rose, Ali still staring at me. I passed right behind him, got to the podium, went right into the Cosell. "Hello, everyone. Howard Cosell coming to you live from Zaire. Some would pronounce it Zaire. They're wrong." It got big laughs. And then I went into the Ali. "Everybody's talking about George Foreman. I want to talk about George Foreman. George Foreman was ugly. He's so slow. George was slow. I come out, voop, voop, voop. And then I have a rope-a-dope George, and I'm still fast at 33 years of age. I'm so fast I can turn up the lights, be in my bed before the room gets dark." "Howard, I'm announcing tonight that I got new religious beliefs. From now on, I want to be known as Izzy Yiskowitz. I am now an Orthodox Jew, Izzy Yiskowitz. I am the greatest of all time." The audience exploded. See, no one had ever done him before. And here he was, a white kid from Long Island, imitating the greatest of all time. And he was loving it. When I was done, he gave me this big bear hug and he whispered in my ear, "You're my little brother." Which is what he always called me until the last time that I saw him. We were always there for each other. If he needed me for something, I was there. He came to anything I asked him to do. Most memorable, he was an honorary chairman for a dinner and a very important event where I was being honored by the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. He did all of this promotion for it. He came to the dinner. He sat with my family for the entire evening. He took photographs with everybody, the most famous Muslim man in the world, honoring his Jewish friend. And because he was there, we raised a great deal of money, and I was able to use it to endow the university in Jerusalem with something that I told him about. And it was something that he loved the theory of, and it thrives to this day. It's called Peace Through the Performing Arts. It's a theater group where Israeli, Arab, and Palestinian actors, writers, and directors all work together in peace, creating original works of art. And that doesn't happen without him. I had so many funny, unusual moments with him. I sat next to him at Howard Cosell's funeral. A very somber day, to be sure. Closed casket was on the stage. Muhammad and I were sitting somewhere over there next to each other. And he quietly whispered to me, "Little brother, do you think he's wearing his hairpiece?" So I said, I don't think so. Well, then how will God recognize him? So I said, "Champ, once he opens his mouth, God will know." So we started laughing. It was a muffled laugh at first, but then we couldn't contain ourselves. Here we were at a funeral, me with Muhammad Ali, laughing like two little kids who heard something dirty in church, you know, and we're just laughing and laughing. And then he looked at me and he whispered, "Howard was a good man." One time he asked me if I would like to run with him one morning, do road work with him. I said, "Well, that'd be amazing. Where do you run?" He said, "Well, I run at this country club, and I run on a golf course early in the morning. It's very private. Nobody bothers me. We'll have a great time." And I said, "Champ, I can't run there. The club has a reputation for being restricted." "Well, it's restricted to me. They don't allow Jews there. They don't have any Jewish members." He was incensed. "I'm a black Muslim, and they let me run there. Little brother, I'm never going to run there again." And he didn't. My favorite memory perhaps was 1979. He had just retired, and there was a retirement party at the Forum Los Angeles for Muhammad and 20,000 of his closest friends in Los Angeles. I performed a piece that I had created. The imitation had grown into a life story. It's called 15 Rounds. And I play him from the age of 18 until he's 36, ready for the rematch with Leon Spinks. I posted it on the internet last week, footage that nobody had ever seen before, of me portraying Ali, doing his life for him, all those years ago in 1979. There were 20,000 people there, but I was doing it only for him. It's one of my favorite performances that I've ever done in my life. I sort of got lost in him. I didn't even know where I was at the end of the performance. And suddenly I'm backstage with another heavyweight champion.
Oh, how I wish I were backstage with Billy Crystal. The whole thing is worth listening to. Leslie, thank you for playing that. Go on to YouTube, look up Billy Crystal's eulogy to Muhammad Ali. But right now, it's Sunday morning, and it's time to wake up.